Hello, and welcome to our program about books, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Lana Collins with co-host
Kathleen Shock.
And during the next half hour, we will be reading articles from the San Antonio Express News and talking about
books, and more books. Lana, we're going to start today's segment by looking back at the year before. So it's a review of 2022, and the reading list offers inspiration in the form of literary diversity. So if you listen carefully, okay, we might be able to broaden our horizons.
Yes.
These reviews were done by Andrew Dansby, who is a staff writer with the San Antonio Express News. Don't blame George Eliot, who had the good sense to use a particular verb in the saying, "Don't judge a book by its cover." The variation on the cliche that one can't judge a book by its cover is flawed, because we can, and we do, metaphorically and literally. Thinking about a small clutch of books released in 2022, I considered their covers. Designer Chip Kidd assisted in the transformation of Cormac McCarthy from a renowned literary great into a bestseller with All the Pretty Horses 30 years ago. 16 years after The Road looked to be McCarthy's final word, he resurfaced weeks ago at age 89 with two new books bearing cover art that resembles what one might expect from Lost Kitaro albums. I'm still working slowly through McCarthy's chewy philosophical narratives, but in contrast to the dressing for his books was Jason Griffin's cover for Jason Reynolds' Ain't Burned All the Bright. The color contrasts, the mix of media, the dust jacket caught my eye in a stack of books that were sent to our offices. I couldn't judge the book by its cover, but I decided to read it because of its cover. Testament to the advantages of a great exterior, I had no frame of reference. It's not a graphic novel, nor an essay, nor a collection of poetry, nor an image plus text, aspirational meditation. It's none of those things, and it's all of those things. It speaks to family, community, country, race, and more with a weary spirit, but one that finds a hopeful lift. I can't profess to having read all or even most of the major books of 2022. I can profess to having read some, to the tune of about 80 titles. So the list that follows is devoid of many of the buzzier titles that enjoy critical consensus at the year's end and reveals a not exclusionary emphasis on books that have some Texas connection. We're going to start our list here. It's quite lengthy, but I think you'll find some interesting subjects here, as well as interesting titles.
Super.
Ain't Burned All That Bright by Jason Reynolds, with artwork by Jason Griffith. Reynolds composes three lyrically rich and very long sentences that span a couple of hundred pages. They touch on family, community, country, and the love and conflict that emerges from those entities. Reynolds gives them added resonance with his moleskin journal visuals. Their two art forms dance together with delicacy and fervor, with frustration and contemplation. This book will stick with me a long time. Ain't Burned All That Bright by Jason Reynolds. Next we have Dilla Time by Dan Charnas. Among the most revelatory music books I've read in a while, Charnas tells the story of James DeWitt Yancey a.k.a. J.D. and J. Dilla. There are books that explain music and those that explain people. Rare are those that twist together those two threads. For years, I could identify a J. Dilla production based on vibe. Charnas describes in engaging detail how a kid from Detroit altered the sound of hip-hop and in doing so also left an imprint on all pop music. A handful of Texans, Jason Moran, Robert Glasper, Chris Dave, make prominent appearances. And that one is Dilla Time by Dan Charnas. Corrections in Ink by Carrie Blakinger. Former Houston Chronicle reporter Blakinger has dedicated her second chance career to giving voice to the incarcerated. Here, she tells her own story of incarceration. Its tale rooted in great expectations and major disappointments, with a frank account of how our criminal justice system and our just system of incarceration function for slightly better than worse and worse. That one is Corrections in Ink by Carrie Blakinger. Born for Trouble, Joe R. Lansdale. Any new offering from Nacogdoches author Lansdale that includes his beloved characters, Hap and Leonard, is welcome. I worried the short story format might lose the luster gained by Lansdale's gift for a long narrative. Nope. Turns out, he possesses a gift for intricate storytelling. This collection is a welcome addition to the Hap and Leonard story. Lansdale and H&L fans should also check out Jesse Pilarin's graphic novel of Lansdale's novel, Mucho Mojo. And that is Born for Trouble by Joe R. Lansdale. How about Weaving Sundown in a Scarlet Light by Joy Harjo? Harjo's recent Houston appearance was a standout, the three-term U.S. Poet Laureate singing even when she wasn't actually singing. For those unfamiliar with her work, this anthology is a fine introduction, particularly because its scope conveys the feeling that Harjo continues to refine her mastery of her craft, which is a long way of saying each new poem she writes could be among her best. And that one is Weaving Sundown in a Scarlet Light by Joy Harjo. Next we have The Certain Body by Julia Guez. Poet and Texas native, Guez took years to edit and assemble her debut collection. Her second moved from conception to publication in a rush, as is documented, a harrowing period of struggle and uncertainty as she dealt with COVID-19 in early 2020. The Certain Body by Julia Guez. Sacred Nature, Karen Armstrong. Armstrong spoke here earlier this year about this slim, by Anderson Standards, book that celebrated various cultures around the world that regarded nature as a source of wonder and miracle. The book serves as a correction to centuries of post-Constantine faith-based beliefs. And rather than type another tout, here I'll recommend the Nick Cave / Sean O'Hagan book, Faith, Hope, and Carnage, which isn't a nature book, but one about tragedy, loss, and a reverence for a deep, undeniable faith that doesn't require certainties. And that one is Sacred Nature by Karen Armstrong. A Most Gracious Neighbor by Chris Kander. Houston author Kander took an eerie short story from a century ago and recast it wonderfully into a contemporary story about the ways we align ourselves culturally. That's the widescreen version. Zoom in, and there's a heartbreaking thread about solitude that connects to the bigger story.
Hmm.
A Most Gracious Neighbor by Chris Kander. Then we have St. Sebastian's Abyss by Mark Haber. Texas author Haber here creates a film-ready, dark comedy about the nature of art criticism, particularly in academia. But honestly, it serves as a critique of the ways we argue about most everything. A comic allegorical tale about fancy intellectual debate during an age where all debate could not be more primal and dumb. And that one is St. Sebastian's Abyss by Mark Haber. Silent Spring Revolution by Douglas Brinkley. An historian known for his presidential body of work, Rice University Professor Brinkley, here treads deeper into the woods at a trailhead he cut with a book about wilderness warrior Teddy Roosevelt.
Mm.
Silent Spring Revolution by Douglas Brinkley. And our last one for now, Monster in the Middle, Tiffany Yanke. Yanke's novel makes brilliant use of time, perspective, and history, offering a love story that requires a little patience. Her story maps out relationships not as insular, but rather the result of generational behavior. It's a rare mix of probing and sentimental. And that one is Monster in the Middle by Tiffany Yanke.
Oh, well, now some of those sound quite interesting,
Kathleen.
They
really do. Thought-provoking.
Yes, right. Well, following along with your introduction to looking back at our last year or so, our next review offers a haunting reminder of the pandemic's early days in our book titled Lucy by the Sea. It's written by Elizabeth Strout, published by Random House. It has 304 pages at a cost of $28. This review is by Maggie Galehouse. She is a correspondent and a Houston-based writer. Elizabeth Strout's ninth book, Lucy by the Sea, is a haunting reminder of how it feels to have your life capsized by a global pandemic. In crisp, spare prose, Strout returns readers to that first disorienting year when we were all unmoored, our lives undone by confusion, fear, and all too often, loss. The pandemic was and still is a paradox. We're all in it together, but the experience is isolating and deeply personal. This is the first modern pandemic novel I've read, and I'm certain it will not be the last. We should expect this topic for years, even decades to come. Lucy Barton, the heroine of Strout's My Name is Lucy Barton, published in 2016, and O. William, published in 2021, chronicles her life from March 2020 to April of 2021. Her ex-husband, William, father of her two grown daughters, bundles her off to a small town in Maine, where he has rented a home in which the two of them can ride out the pandemic in platonic companionship. Lucy is still mourning the death of her second husband, David while William is recovering from the end of his third marriage to Estelle and his separation from their young daughter, Bridget. William is a parasitologist and Lucy is a writer. So they face the unfolding crisis in different ways. William, who is focused on the science, is an early advocate for masks, social distancing, wiping down groceries, and more. He's a strategic thinker who foresees potential problems and acts. Lucy is much more adrift. She is slower to internalize the magnitude of the moment, yet she is able to capture her disorientation in words. Quote, I did not know where to put my mind. There was a feeling of mutedness, like my ears were plugged up as though I was underwater. Unquote. For Lucy, as for most of us, the pandemic is a reckoning, a personal reset that compels her to examine her family, her past, her purpose. Lucy's childhood was marked by extreme emotional and physical deprivation. Her mother was particularly cruel, and Lucy spent most of her days lonely, cold, and hungry. Remembering those joyless years, Lucy says to William, quote, my whole childhood was a lockdown. I never saw anyone or went anywhere, unquote. In the intervening decades, though, Lucy has made up a, quote, nice, unquote, mother, whom she summons when she needs love and support. As anyone 50 or older will tell you, learning how to parent yourself is a necessity, which Strout captures with compassion and concision. The nice mother in Lucy's head repeatedly assures her that she is making the right choices, that she will find a way through the pandemic. As ever, Strout's prose is elegantly unadorned. Lucy shares her story as if the reader is a trusted confidant who deserves careful explanation. The narrative is frank, like Lucy, and broken mostly into short sections. This mimics the rhythm of those early pandemic days, when it was hard to focus, difficult to reach conclusions. Better to break life into discrete, digestible bits. Lucy and William are in contact with their daughters, Chrissy and Becca, who are together in Connecticut for the early months of the pandemic. Lucy especially struggles with being physically separated from her girls. The family does manage to get together a few times, and Lucy is called upon to handle a potential calamity in one of her daughter's lives. In Maine, Lucy and William take walks and slowly begin to make a few friends. And this is where what I'll call the Stromptiverse converges. In new novels, Strout often revisits characters from previous works, as was the case with Oh, William, published in 2021, which followed William and Lucy's earlier journey to Maine to meet William's recently discovered half-sister. That half-sister Lucy appears in, half-sister Lois appears in Lucy by the Sea, as does Bob Burgess, who becomes an essential friend to Lucy and William. Readers will remember Bob from Stroud's 2013 novel, The Burgess Boys. Bob is now married to Catherine Caskey, first introduced in Abide With Me, published in 2006. Lucy also befriends Charlene Bibber, a cleaner at the Maple Tree Apartments, now home to an elderly Olive Kitteridge, the bracing eponymous hero of Stroud's Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of 2008 and 2019's Olive Again. Olive is friendly with a fellow tenant named Isabel, the mother in Stroud's 1998 daughter-mother novel, Amy and Isabel, who also played a supporting role in Olive Again. While Olive and Isabel don't appear as characters in their own rights, Charlene shares details about their lives and catches up readers at the same time. For me, news of Olive Kitteridge is always welcome. My fingers are crossed for a third Olive-focused book. All of this is to say that if the pandemic has been a reckoning for many people, Lucy by the Sea feels like a fictional reckoning for Stroud, with characters culled from a quarter century of fiction. Clearly, they're all still walking around in her head, and some of them have walked right onto the page. Still, the novel remains an intimate look at the pandemic's effect on one woman and the small circle of people with whom she is in contact. It is mostly a privileged crowd with safe places to stay and money at the ready. When Stroud brings non-pandemic news from the broader world into this tiny universe, including George Floyd's murder and the Black Lives Matter movement, it is jarring as if real life has interrupted fiction. These are the book's strangest and oddly most distancing moments. As the novel closes, the first round of vaccines has circulated and the world has started to open back up, offering a tantalizing glimpse of something approaching normalcy. Although Lucy faces the future with a, quote, shiver of foreboding, unquote, she recognizes that she must trust herself. She thinks, quote, we're all in lockdown all the time. We just don't know it, that's all. But we do the best we can. Most of us are just trying to get through, unquote. And that book, titled Lucy by the Sea, was written by Elizabeth Strout, Strout.
Thank you so much, Lana. I love that. The Olive books are very interesting.
Oh, you've read some. Mm-hmm. Oh, good.
We're going to continue with a few other noteworthy titles with Texas ties. This one is Latino Almanac by Nicholas Canelos, University of Houston professor and founder of the Houston-based Arte Publico Press. Canelos offers short profiles of 650 Latinos that covers astronauts and athletes, elected officials and entertainers, writers and rappers. Latino Almanac by Nicholas Canelos. DJ Screw, A Life in Slow Revolution by Lance Scott Walker. Walker's thorough and vibrant oral history of the late great DJ, is two books lovingly twisted into one. It tells the story of Robert Davis Jr. and how he became a local and then international music trendsetter. It also provides overdue documentation of the Houston music scene that nurtured Screw. That title, DJ Screw, A Life in Slow Revolution by Lance Scott Walker. Talk Talk by Alan Vorda. For years and years, Vorda has set up interviews with authors visiting for appearances with InPrint Houston's Reading Series. This collection is full of deep, thoughtful questions and revelatory answers. It calls back to old Paris Review collections where authors weren't on 15-minute calls, but rather eager, most of the time, and engaged to discuss their work with a guy like Vorda, whose preparation and interview skills are astounding. And that's Talk Talk by Alan Vorda. A Taste of Magic by J.L. L made a strong impression 2 years ago with a YA fantasy series. Here, she makes use of the same skills, grand imagination, deep feeling for community, to tell a story of a girl who uncovers her family's witchy secret through a magic school in a beauty shop. A Taste of Magic by J.L., and that's E-L-L-E-L. Summer of Rain, Summer of Fire by Bill Messner. Look at any series of election results, and you'll find vigorous disagreement. But our current lines of cultural dissent do seem to emerge with added buzzing from the Vietnam War. And Texas native Meissner creates a story about a domestic bombing. It's sentimental at times, but also probing and thoughtful about the ways we divide ourselves. Summer of Rain, Summer of Fire by Bill Meissner. A Noble Cunning by Patricia Bernstein. Filing and forgetting historical atrocities is perhaps human nature. Bernstein's fiction debut is a piece of historical fiction based upon a story of Winifred Maxwell, a Catholic dealing with anti-Catholic fervor in England in the 18th century. It speaks reverently about resistance at the most individual level. A Noble Cunning by Patricia Bernstein. Paper Airlines by Tabitha Forney. This is technically a 2021 title, but I meant to get to it the year before. Forney's husband was in the World Trade Center towers on 9/11 and escaped. But she envisions a life in which a spouse didn't get out. Her story is full of panic, trauma, deep philosophical considerations, and a difficult but hopeful resolution. Paper Airplanes by Tabitha Forney. And finally, we have Pictures of the Shark by Thomas H. McNeely. McNeely has published in all the great story publications, and for good reason. Consider just a moment the first sentence of the first story. Through the window next to his bed, Buddy watched his father build a wire cage to house a light bulb to keep the bougainvillea bush warm. And it goes from there.
All right. Well, thank you, Kathleen. And you have been listening to About Books and Owl on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Lana Collins with co-host
Kathleen Shock.
saying
goodbye from OWL Radio.